So I'm going to wrap up with a brief presentation, and looking at the clock, we'll have plenty of time for discussion about what all this means. I just need to go past the introduction. And what I'm going to try to do is to think through what the implications of these recommendations are for closing the gaps, disparities as we call them here in the U.S., or the inequalities. So just as background, you've heard from the other speakers that cancer is preventable, possible, and is a priority, and that the socioeconomic and ethnic disparities reflect the environments, the physical, economic, and social environments. So the question that I posed for this presentation is, so of the 48 or 50 recommendations in the report, which ones would we, if we had to do some picks of, you know, like four or five of them perhaps, which ones would get us closest to closing gaps, achieving equity, and reducing disparities? I think there are two types. One would be general approaches to make, sort of to raise all boats, improve the overall environments for meeting cancer prevention. And the other would be targeted approaches to improve the specific circumstances that lead to high risk, and hopefully to give an advantage to the disadvantage. And it's important to keep these two in mind, because you could improve specific circumstances but leave the whole base still at very high risk in the U.S. And so I think we need to make lower cancer risk in the population as a whole, and then specifically accelerate and close gaps with respect to high-risk groups. So this is one of the evidence slides, and I just use it to summarize the factors that we might target with particular reference to minority populations. For the convincing evidence, this is obesity risk factors, increase the physical activity, things that decrease risk, increased consumption of low energy dense foods, and being breastfed as a lowering risk for children from the beginning of life, and then to work on these risk factors, the things that increase risk, sedentary living, you want to decrease these things, energy-dense foods, sugary drinks, fast foods, and television viewing within the context of the overall dietary pattern that's recommended. So to highlight how important these are for socioeconomic or ethnic minority groups, I'm just going to show you a few slides. These are on ethnic differences. This is the CDC maps of obesity prevalence, the percent with obesity, percent in a state with obesity levels over a certain threshold, and the darker it is, the more obese people there are in the area. So that was white, non-Hispanic whites, this is Hispanics, and this is African Americans, so, and that's the area that I work in particularly. So reducing obesity is much more important for certain ethnic groups in the United States, even though it's important for the U.S. overall. It's also important for lower socioeconomic groups. This is a slide for children 2 to 19 from the Haines data. And what you can see here is that the highest levels of obesity in the white children and in the Mexican-American children are in the lowest, the below the poverty line group. The black children have higher levels across all these income levels, and it's kind of an odd fact that, and this is mostly due to the rates in girls, that the highest rates are actually in a higher income group, but overall, low income groups, whether or not they have more obesity, have a different set of conditions for addressing the obesity. So low income, living in a low income neighborhood, having less income, creates risk. With respect to the overall diet in the U.S. population, this was prepared for the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee report, and it's for the whole nation. It shows difference from goals. So here's the goal for foods that we are recommending eating more of in our dietary guidelines, and you can see that we're not approaching that goal yet. And then here are the foods that we're supposed to eat less of, very compatible with the WCRF recommendations, and we're way over the limit for things that we want to decrease. So those are the kind of goals. And I just am showing you a couple of slides to highlight again that some of these factors are more important for, in this case, low-income populations. So this is the calories from sugar-sweetened beverages, for example, in people living up to 130% of the poverty line, and then those living 180 5% or over, and you can see that there are more calories from sugar-sweetened beverages in the lower-income segment of the population. This is for African-Americans and compared to whites and Mexican-Americans. This is for women, more calories. I think the most striking is in the 31 to 50-year-old women, where it's more than twice as high, the number of calories from sugar-sweetened beverages. So there's more obesity and some of these factors that we're targeting for cancer prevention and chronic disease prevention overall are more important for low SES and ethnic, some ethnic groups. So this is the general recommendation, coordinated strategies to change environment, working together across a lot of different sectors. I think Jeffrey mentioned that there's more commitment to concerted action, comprehensive action now, and I think that there is, and we've had the formation of this National Prevention, Health Promotion, and Public Health Council. It's been talked about here at this meeting. This council is charged with providing coordination and leadership at the federal level among all the executive departments. And you can see the departments listed here. The interventions will reach beyond the healthcare and public health sectors in housing, transportation, food and nutrition, education, the workplace, and the environment as a whole. So I do think that there's some promise that we're moving in the way that we, that's suggested by these policy recommendations, and this will clearly benefit the high-risk populations because, as you've heard, we can't rely on educating individuals to make this change, and especially for individuals who may not have the time or resources to act on things, personal changes, but would benefit from environmental changes. The rest of the strategies I'm going to talk about are the targeted ones, and I hope you've heard of the Healthy Food Financing Initiative. The Department of Agriculture has mapped the food deserts in the country, the places where food access is limited, and this is the commitment from the recent legislation to bring food, good food stores to neighborhoods that don't have them, and there's something about this that seems to appeal to the national psyche and culture. This idea that people can't get to a grocery store now that it's been publicized has picked up and been made into a policy theme. Breastfeeding equity, I have a couple of points to make on that. These are the recommendations for governments, industry, and workplaces and institutions. I'm not going to show you data on breastfeeding rates, but they certainly are lower in low-income populations and African-American women. They're lower for a lot of reasons, not necessarily lower in Mexican-American or Hispanic populations, but overall breastfeeding rates need to increase. And again, this is a possible way to accelerate progress in the highest risk populations, which are the least likely to breastfeed and have the resources to breastfeed. So, the governments pay attention to the UN Code of Breastfeeding. Industry ensure that the marketing and promotion of breast milk substitutes and complementary foods follow the UN codes. And then for workplaces and institutions, encourage sustained breastfeeding with supportive environment and employment contracts and access to child care. And here, there's some literature showing that one of the reasons that low-income or other high-risk women don't breastfeed as often is because they have to go back to work right away, and there's no culture, there's no resources or support for breastfeeding, and so they don't even try to start, or they stop very early because they have to go back to work. So these are the recommendations, and I think that are particularly interesting for disparities. And I, you know, if I'd given this talk, you know, 8 months or a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to show that we're, as this slide says, we're joining the rest of the civilized world. The U.S. now has national policy in the Affordable Care Act. There's a lot of stuff buried in that act, that employers have to provide the breaks and the facilities for women to breastfeed. There's going to be some details to be worked out with the implementation, but the Department of Labor already has fact sheets on their website. You can get to it if you just put in, I forget what I put into, I put in breastfeeding into Google, Breastfeeding Affordable Care Act, and it came right up, and you can link to the Department of Labor fact sheet about what is what's required to support this women. And this is really, I think, going to set the tone. It requires some social marketing and some education and some other programs, but it's a part of the piece that had to be in place to reduce the disparities that could be addressed by breastfeeding. Another major policy initiative that you may be familiar with is the changes in the WIC food package. It is an example of the leverage that we have with the federal nutrition program. So we have food stamps, which are right now not nutritionally targeted, although there are some pilot programs to try to target the food stamps or SNAP program. We have school lunches, which are being improved. But this is WIC, and I spoke to the WIC professionals conference about a month ago in San Diego, and I found myself saying, and I really meant it, if we could make this WIC package work right, the lowest income women would have the best diets. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Because this package took the, you see the IOM report up in the corner, an IOM report was commissioned to study the WIC food package and make recommendations. They are healthy diet, top of the line dietary guidelines, and they were taken almost whole into the regulations for the new WIC food packages, so that the packages now incentivize breastfeeding more, suppress the giving of formula when a child is being breastfed, don't give juice to the infants, and enhance the package for breastfeeding women in other ways that try to use WIC instead of being a formula promotion program to be more consistent with breastfeeding and other dietary guidelines. And I do want to also comment on food marketing and equity in this area because it is so important, it's critically important for populations that are targeted with marketing of unhealthy foods and to be on the watch because the pressure to stop targeting children in general could lead to targeting, for example, of children in communities that may have less political power. And we've already seen a change in the ratio for soft drinks, for example. So soft drink promotion is going down, but the ratio of black to white soft drink promotion has gone up. So relatively, it's not going down as fast. So these were the WCRF recommendations, restrict advertising, marketing of fast and other processed foods, and then for industry to collaborate in order to stop this kind of advertising. Examples of the targeted advertising, a study that was done in three cities of outdoor advertising. So even though we do TV and some other things, we also look at outdoor advertising. Los Angeles, Austin, Texas, and Philadelphia were the cities. It was a content analysis, a very carefully done GIS survey, foot survey, looking at what's out there, counting the space, adjusted with some city planners and people who know how to do this kind of work. And here are the findings. If you live in an upper income neighborhood, you don't have billboards and stuff plastered all over the walls and over the streets advertising junk food. I mean, you know that when you think about it, but this is documented that, so regardless of your ethnicity, if you live in certain neighborhoods, you're not going to be as exposed to this kind of advertising. So there's something that has real policy, nice local policy implications, because why should people, just because they live in a low-income neighborhood, have to be totally bombarded with whatever people can plaster on any space? Zoning could take care of some of that. And also, the density of advertising that varied was heaviest in the African-American zip codes and then lowest in the white zip codes in terms of outdoor advertising. It's just one type. And this is one of the classical TV advertising studies from a while back. There's new ones coming out, but this was a content analysis of 500 or so advertisements on primetime TV, and the major findings are in the middle. There were more food ads on the shows in the African American market, 24% versus 15%. And just to look at soft drinks, it was 10.6 to 2 in terms of the percentage of the advertisement that was for soft drinks in the African American market. So this is targeting, and the policies to regulate advertising are not going to be able to focus on ethnic targeting directly, but anything we can do to reduce advertising of unhealthful foods is going to benefit the targeted communities. Finally, I wanted to mention media. This is one that is kind of a sleeper in the report. We're trying to say that the media should do more to educate the public about the public health issues, differentiate advertising from news, which is not always done. But I think that this one also has a specific meaning for inequalities or disparities. A colleague, Anise Kim, who was at Penn for a while and is now at RTI in North Carolina, led a study of how disparities are framed in the media. What do people say when they report disparities, and how often do they attribute it to personal responsibility versus some sort of societal factor? She and a very enthusiastic and tireless team of coders looked at almost 4,000 articles that they found, and about 40 newspapers, it was only newspapers, with a racial and ethnic disparity focus. Most of them were on African Americans, and cancer was one of the top issues that was covered along with HIV and cardiovascular. Only about 30% of these articles address causes. Of course, the academics address the causes and the advocates address the solutions. You could imagine that. But for both, they were mostly first behavioral explanations dominating the discourse, and then societal, health care, and genetic after that. So here's the point. Only 4% of the articles talked about social justice or fairness or anything that would have to do with causes of disparities that relate to unequal treatment in the society. That's something that the media could help with if they were educated and paid more attention to the disparities that are social justice issues. So in summary, the priorities for cancer prevention for achieving equity include raising all boats, to be sure, using a health and all policies approach, synergizing multi-sectoral activities to improve the environments in the society. But then there are lots of targeted strategies that we have under our control that are going to reach or have a greater effect in the disparity populations, and I've listed them here and hope that you can think of others if you would go through the report. All the recommendations are in the summary, even though the details aren't all there about how we came to them. There are other places that you could look to say, is this something that would help to close the gap and accelerate progress in inequalities?